Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast, this time from Denver, Colorado. My special guest this week, the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, and we'll have an extended conversation about everything about the travel business, overcapacity, climate change, over-tourism, the challenges of the travel workforce and keeping them, and oh yes, Rocky Mountain oysters. Then we'll go dancing with Michaela Melozzi, Emmy Award-winning producer and the host of the PBS show, Bare Feet. But first up, the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Mr. Governor, thank you for welcoming.
Peter, we're excited to have you back here in colorful Colorado. Welcome to our great state.
And spoken like a man who wants to promote the state.
Well, you know, the word has gotten out already that Colorado is the best place to be. So, it doesn't even take me to promote it. People know that Colorado is a place to be.
Well, let's put this in some time context. Of course, you go back just 2.5 years ago to the pandemic. Colorado was on everybody's radar. Let's move there. Because you know, people could breathe. People could do social distancing baked into the geography. that, of course, gave you some challenges, too.
Well, you know, our ski resorts had record seasons that year. And by the way, this year we have absolutely incredible snow. We're at about 130% of normal snow. So I invite everybody to beautiful Western Colorado. Here's a little travel trip to tip. If you can, weekdays are generally better. Us locals like to go on weekends. We work here. And of course, if you can only make it on a weekend, by all means, come. But you're likely to get better deals and have less wait times at lifts. Really, no wait time at lifts on weekdays. Absolutely, I'll be skiing this week. Our kids are 11 and 8, and they want to go every weekend, which we can't do. I'm lucky to get in two or three weekends a year.
But you're going on the
weekend.
That's
why I want to make sure your out of state listeners don't come in on weekends, because I want to be able to get up there on the weekend myself
and hide.
Well, so do many Denverites and Coloradans and Boulderites. But no, great snow. And you're right. During the pandemic, our main recreational value, camping, hiking, biking, rafting, fishing, skiing, boarding, these are all things that boomed during the pandemic. Because they were all things that people could do outdoors, everything was open here, and really we're coming off of those record seasons. And this year, we're glad to have record snow. So we have great skiing now and, you know, late March, and I expect, and this is another little known secret, we will have one or two of our ski resorts that are open into June, perhaps even into July, but
that's
very likely
in California too, by the way.
Yeah, so very likely Breckenridge and Arapaho Basin are usually open into June. It's certainly possible this year. Every now and then, once a decade, we get like July 4 skiing. We're hoping this year is one of those, but we can't count on it yet. But
we see back in New York, where we haven't had any snow this year, we're fully expecting cross-country skiing in April. I just thought I'd mention that.
There you go. Yeah. I don't know, in the city in Manhattan, or what?
I've seen it happen.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Western Colorado. So many people didn't just move to Denver. They moved further west.
That's right, especially with this, like, what we know, telecommuting, location-dependent employment. So, I mean, more jobs now. I mean, you know, if you have to be where your job is, you have to be where your job is. But many people, everything from professionals, you know, lawyers, accountants, to people that work for big companies, now have the ability to work remotely. There's other kinds of jobs where, let's say you're in sales or marketing, maybe you have to travel a lot, even like yourself. You travel a lot for your work. You could live in Western Colorado if you wanted to.
Just don't tell anybody.
We won't tell anybody.
Okay, good.
So absolutely. Now, what has that done? It's really helped revive many of our rural economies, because we have, you know, we always think about the famous mountain towns, Aspen, Vail, of course, but there are so many beautiful mountain towns in Western Colorado, but there weren't a lot of ways to, you know, have a high level job locally, right? These are small towns. So now with telecommuting, you can live in beautiful Western Colorado, you know, an hour from the best skiing in the world, and you can work out of San Francisco, New York, et cetera. And if you need to go there once a month, you can.
And of course, that brings up airlift, because the biggest problem we have domestically in this country is airlines reducing service on domestic routes. We're seeing cities like Toledo, Ohio, and Ithaca, New York, and Islip, Long Island, and Moline, Illinois, with airlines saying, we can't afford to fly there anymore, and they're pulling out.
So the good news about Colorado is Denver is a major hub for United and Southwest.
And by the way, Southwest used to say they would never fly to Denver. And now they're the number two airline, right?
Big hub, yeah. And then we have a local low-cost carrier, Frontier, who, if you're into that, is wonderful. I mean, right? I mean, you know, $29, $49. They even have fly as much as you want pass for like $500. You know,
Have you flown Frontier?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I was in Congress for 10 years, so I had the commute every week
back to Reagan.
Absolutely, and United was my, preferred airline, but based on schedule, I flew Frontier probably a third of the time.
Yeah, and you know, they don't realize that Frontier just started service to Jamaica. They're starting service
Caribbean,
over. They have a huge network now.
And here's what I advise. You might find, you know, you might live wherever you live. You might live in Minneapolis. You may live in Salt Lake. You may find that taking Frontier through Denver is probably your least expensive route to the Caribbean or Mexico. And spend a couple days in Denver while you're here. Check it out. Add to your vacation.
So what you need to do, Governor, is to make sure the airlines don't charge you an additional charge for stopping en route.
I don't think they charge for that. They charge for every other little thing they can, right? So, I mean,
hey, you've flown Frontier.
Absolutely. I mean, so, you know, bag fees, et cetera. But by the way, you know, it's still the best deal. So, I mean, if you're price sensitive, you're going to want Frontier, others like it. Obviously, because of Frontier's presence here and Southwest presence is here, United is also very competitive. And here's another little fact. United has its pilot training center. Right here in Denver.
I've flown the simulators there.
You probably have. Oh, yeah. And I didn't know this until recently, but every United pilot in their entire system, international, domestic,
has to
comes to Denver once every 9 months for ongoing training.
I know. And people forget that in the old days, that was Continental's training area, too. They did a lot of simulator training.
It's been significantly upgraded from those days,
yes,
as
it
you
has.
Know. But
yes,
it's
it
absolutely
has.
Terrific. United continues to increase their presence here. And we have beautiful, incredible improvements at the airport, at Denver International Airport occurring. Now, you know, pardon the dust. Of course, it's a little challenging during the process. There's areas that are a little inconvenient.
But you and I go back to the days when DIA stood for doesn't include airplanes.
Oh, my goodness. It's incredible now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be adding even more gates and more direct nonstop service to more destinations when it's complete.
Well, I will tell you this. When I came to Denver this time, I flew nonstop from London. That's a new route.
Yeah, absolutely. We have European routes. We have Tokyo. We're looking at other Asian routes. So we have a significant international routes. And, of course, anywhere in the Caribbean basin, Mexico, lots of affordable routes. And you know that it also means people can get here. So we have a lot of tourists from all over the world. And one thing that was interesting during the pandemic is, like most places, we didn't have our Asian tourists or our European tourists because they weren't able to, for their own countries, had protocols that, you know, maybe they had to quarantine 14 days if they went back.
At their own expense.
Right. So we had mostly domestic. So we did this all with domestic tourism. Domestic tourism boom. Now we're beginning to see our international travelers come back, which we're very excited to welcome in our resort destinations, as well as the city of Denver.
So the real question, which is not just for you, it's for every destination in America, is the job situation, especially in the service industry and the travel industry. They lost so many people during the pandemic. I have no idea where they went. If you can let me know where they went, I'd love to know. But they not necessarily have come back.
We have in Colorado, and this is not too different than many other states that are doing well and booming, we have two job openings for every unemployed person right now. Now, you know, there's sometimes going to be some skills alignment right. or gaps and people need to be trained up. But we're doing a couple things to improve the situation here in Colorado. One is we're focusing on childcare and free preschool. We start free preschool this fall. We never had that in Colorado. It's a big
initiative
of mine.
That allows people to go to work.
Absolutely. It involves a parent to be able to go to work a year sooner if they choose.
You know,
it's a big deal.
You bring up an interesting point because you may remember the supermodel Petra Nemkova. She was very seriously injured and left to die during the tsunami back in 2004 in Thailand. She lost her fiance. And when she recovered, which nobody thought she would, she learned something very interesting, that the only way you can rebuild communities is to rebuild the schools first.
Yep.
Because if you build the schools, then the parents can go to work and the economic base then thrives. So that's what you're really talking about.
It really is. High quality preschool. We have full day kindergarten. When I became governor, we only had half day kindergarten. Parents had to pay for full day. So it's for the first and foremost, the benefits to the kids, the skills they get, especially kids from disadvantaged backgrounds or non-English speaking will be able to perform at grade level as they enter school, but also that immediate workforce benefit today for the families, for the parents. That's one way. The other way we want to make progress, and this is a big issue we're leaning into now, is how we make housing more affordable in our state. Now, look, we're a lot less expensive than Los Angeles in California. We get that. But because of that, we've had Californians and New Yorkers move to Colorado. Okay. That's put an upward pressure on prices, right?
It's one thing to say we've got job openings, but we have to make a place for people to live.
That's right. And that's one of the things we hear from companies looking to locate in here. How can our workforce afford to live there? Our average home price, Denver metro area, is about $570,000. Now, if you're in LA or New York, you say, wow, that's cheap. But if you're in Ohio or
you know,
other areas, that's expensive. So what do we need more housing? So we're looking at removing barriers and reducing red tape to create more housing. And that's our big focus working with the legislature this session, is how we can make sure Colorado can develop in a sustainable way. It means more opportunities to live affordably near where jobs are on transit corridors because we want to preserve our open space. We also have to be conscious about the water situation. So that's really what we're leaning into now to make sure that Colorado remains an affordable place to live as well as being a great place to live for the next few decades.
And I got to bring up the elephant in the room, climate change, because it applies to everybody. We're seeing canals in Venice running out of water. We're seeing what's going on at Lake Mead in Nevada, you know, Lake Powell. What's happening in Colorado?
Yeah,
so everybody's stealing water from you.
They are. Right. This is where we're the origin state.
Yeah.
Much of it originates here. We're the upper basin states, along with you know, Utah, Wyoming, for the water. So we're in a better legal situation with regard to the water because it does start here. But effectively, what's happening across the Colorado River Basin states is the water that had been promised and divided up is simply no longer there, and it's not likely to be there most years for the foreseeable future. So we are, of course, want to do our part. I mean, the states that are going to in the most difficult situation are going to continue to be Arizona, Nevada, and California. But we are absolutely looking to up our game on water stewardship. How we do our housing policy is frankly a big part of that, because we need to make sure that we do it in a way where people have a lower per capita water usage without sacrificing the quality of life at all.
Question that I'm not a scientist, but I would think you know, desalination is not a new idea. Maybe not for Colorado, but for Nevada and California and Arizona, if they had laid pipe 25 years ago, we might have a different conversation then.
Yeah, that's not, as you said, for Colorado, that's not the answer.
I know
but,
that. Yeah.
But absolutely, I think that's where a lot of the states that have those ocean resources, water resources, are likely to go. They're simply not going to get more water out of, you know, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah. It's simply not there, and that flow will continue to be diminished with climate change.
So where do you reach the point of diminishing returns where you the growth can't continue because the supplies aren't there?
Well, I think it has to be incorporated into, I mean, especially what you have in, you know, for instance, Phoenix area, and you've been there, and many parts of Nevada. I mean, you have cities and deserts,
right.
And you basically have agriculture in deserts, and these are areas that do not naturally have water. And so the question is, how do you get water? How do you pay for it? For a while, those issues were deferred because there's enough water in the Colorado River Compact, but for two reasons, that sort of convention of the 20th century no longer holds. One is less water and climate change. The second is simply more demand and more population in Arizona, in California, and Nevada. So, I mean, the demand today is a lot greater than it was 50 years ago, a lot greater than it was 100 years ago. So less water, more demand. That's why we are where we are.
And of course, there's a bad cycle here. You see it in California where you have drought, then the roots can't hold anything. You have mudslides, then you have forest fires. It just continues to
Yeah, we're, and as I mentioned, we're in a stronger situation in Colorado. Much of eastern Colorado agriculture has Ogallala Aquifer and subsurface water that it accesses. We are, as I said, the upper basin state along with Utah and Wyoming where the water originates. But it doesn't mean we're immune to the issues, but
right.
We don't have the same challenges that Arizona, Nevada, and California have.
Yet.
Well, you know, it's a different nature of the challenges.
Right.
I mean, we are, as I said, especially in areas that have access to underground aquifers, we're in a stronger situation. I mean, there's a whole nother issue around that. I mean, many of those underwater aquifers have also been decreasing, and there's areas that were irrigated and now are dry land, but they still, in a sustainable way, if we manage them effectively through our water basins, are able to power the ag economy in much of our state.
All right, so here's the point where you get to have some fun. All right. I've never been to Colorado before. Where are you going to take me?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I will take you all over the state, but let's see. One, we actually now have a in the San Luis Valley, which you absolutely need to visit. We now have a stork migration, annual stork migration festival, not too far from Alamosa. It's through much of March. 20,000 storks make about a 1 month residency, not too far from Alamosa. And you would love the San Luis Valley, Del Norte, Alamosa, Mancos, a number of great towns down there. It's kind of the cultural heart of Colorado. Of course, was a part of the Spanish Empire before the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which we're currently celebrating the 150th anniversary.
And people don't realize the Spanish
were here. Absolutely. The southern Colorado, about the southern third of Colorado, was part of Mexico until the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. And and there's families that were Spanish land-grant families still living in the area, of course. And it's a very, if you like the culinary aspect, the cultural aspect, the nature aspect, I mentioned the storks. Spring is a great time to visit the San Luis Valley.
And that's the only place you're taking me?
Oh, I'm going to take you all over. from there, you know, and I'm not going to mention the ones you know. I mean, you know Aspen, you know Vail. I mean, you know that you don't need to talk about those.
No.
So let's go to fall. Late summer, fall. We're going to take you down to La Junta, Otero County, Los Animas County, and we're going to witness the tarantula migration. And
say that again.
Yeah. Do you like tarantulas? Are you a tarantula guy? You look like a tarantula guy, Peter.
Are you a tarantula guy?
Well, of course. We got that in common, right?
Okay.
So
I'll go with that.
You want to see hundreds of tarantulas?
I'll say yes.
They're about as big as the palm of your hand. So every October, this is on Comanche National Grasslands, beautiful national park. There's also some canyons there if you're into horseback riding, not too far from the city of La Junta in southeast Colorado. You can go out on a late summer fall day, and you will see scurrying across the ground a number of tarantulas.
Please elaborate.
So I will, and then I want to go back and talk about some of the others. So yeah. So anyway, you can see that every year, essentially it's the male tarantulas looking for females. So you can see a bunch of horny male tarantulas scurrying across the ground. Very exciting. Highly recommended La Junta tarantula tourism.
Can I ask the obvious question? Mm-hmm. Are these the poisonous tarantulas?
No, they're not.
Okay.
You know, and
no, Mr. Bond, you're going to die.
Of course not.
Okay.
I've held them. They crawl on me. We're no longer encouraged to hold them, but if they crawl over your foot, they crawl over your foot. It's fine. But no, they can.
So you can deal with the legislature.
They can bite.
You can deal with the legislature now because you held the tarantulas.
Oh well, actually, the tarantula is a lot easier than that. I can tell you that much. The other thing I want to talk about is, in addition to our famous national parks, everybody knows, right. I'm not, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park, sure. Sand Dunes. We're not going to talk about those. What I am going to talk about is our 42 state parks. So like many states, Colorado is super proud of our state park system. And the national parks are great, but they're busy and they get a lot of traffic. So if you're looking for a little bit off the beaten trail, beautiful park experiences, right? So a park experience is more improvements than just the bush. You can go in the bush if you want. You can go hunting, whatever. We have that. But if you want accommodations, maybe you want a campsite, maybe you just, you know, want a trail, look up Colorado State Parks. We have 42 of them. Some of them have lakes. They're absolutely gorgeous. Our two newest ones, one is in Trinidad in southern Colorado, Fisher's Peak, a beautiful flat top mesa, which it'll be an easy hike. It'll be open by this summer, midsummer. It's about a 2 mile hike or so to the peak.
That's manageable.
Very manageable. And then our other new one is Sweetwater Lake, which is Dotsero exit on Highway 70. So it's about an hour west of Vail, west of Vail. And it is a beautiful mountain lake where we have, there's a wharf and lake activities, but also just a beautiful area.
All right, last question before we let you go. All right, you've got me running all over the state now. Where are we eating?
Oh my goodness. We have amazing food in Colorado. So I mentioned sort of our, culinary tradition in the San Luis Valley. Right. Great culinary towns. Obviously, you know, Denver is more of what you call the, you know, world-class cosmopolitan culinary center. So you're going to have everything here. Outside of Denver, I like Pueblo. We have authentic kind of Pueblo cuisine, which is a melding of kind of the Hispanic influence along with some of the other immigrants that have made their home in Pueblo over the years. Some great food in Pueblo. Boulder has a lot of high end and farm to table type dining experiences if you're into that. So there's, you know, and then of course, as I said, Denver prides itself on great culinary diversity, lots of top champion chefs in the area. We have fun with different pop-up restaurants and chefs that come in over time and, you know, lots of opportunities for culinary explorations here. And don't forget to try the Rocky Mountain oysters.
You had to do that, didn't you?
Well, have you had some yet?
Why don't you explain what they are?
Well,
as only you can.
Well, absolutely. They're simply fried bull testicles.
This concludes the show.
Come on down and have some, Peter. Next time you come, I'll set some out for you, okay?
And you're going to tell me they taste just like chicken.
They're best during castration season.
Stop this. Unbelievable. Are you serious?
Well, of course. Absolutely. What else are you going to do with the bull testicles during castration season?
And the person who actually does this has to be a very bold person.
Well, we have a lot of cowboys here in Colorado.
Yes.
And that's right now we're in calving season. So we catch them as they come out. And then another season is going to be the castration season. And we have branding as well. You want to join me to brand some cattle sometime?
I'll do that with you, yeah.
You like that better than castrating cattle?
What do you think?
I don't know. It's up to you. It's a personal preference thing.
You know exactly the answer.
Okay. Well, brand them. There you go.
Because, if I went to castrate them, then they'd brand me.
Well, you get to take something home when you castrate them to eat.
Now you're getting out of control.
Well, it's just, it's yet another reason to visit Colorado.
That can't be the primary reason.
No, it's more like an auxiliary reason. It's just like it's extra benefit you get when you come by. But, I mean, you come for the whitewater rafting, you stay for the bull testicles.
What club are you performing at?
Busy being governor for the next few years, but I'll join you on the circuit afterwards.
You
How about
got
that?
It. Oh my God. Last question for somebody who's never been to Colorado, right? What's the first thing that's going to surprise them that they're not expecting?
Well, you know, I think usually, as I said, they're coming for something outdoor recreation related. I think in general, people will be pleasantly surprised by our friendly people. Not as kind of hardcore and as the East Coast or even rude. And I think we're a little bit more practical in the West Coast. So I think they'll find a great resource in our people. Coloradans are helpful. If you're in doubt about where to eat or where to go, just ask somebody who's a local and I'm sure they'll be happy to
share some great ideas
with you.
And if you're really hard up for
the
Rocky Mountain oysters, talk to the governor.
We can hook you up.
My thanks to Governor Polis. And if you believe that dance is a powerful form of communication, then Michaela Melosi will prove it. She's the multi-Emmy winning host of Bare Feet on PBS, and her quest for dance and dancing around the world is also a part of powerful storytelling.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Michaela Malazzi, how are you?
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. So I'm going to just get right into this because Bare Feet is really about dancing all around the world, or I should say dance around the world.
It is, and dancing. You know, in every destination that I go, I learn the dance and music from the people that are gracious enough to share their culture and their music and dance with me. I think it's the best way to travel, personally.
I will tell you that when I went down, when I was a kid, I actually went to dance class when I was about 11 years old, and I learned things like the Lindy and the Foxtrot and the Charleston, the waltz, which I was then completely turned around when I finally went to Vienna and realized that the American waltz is nothing like the Viennese waltz. But
exactly.
But when I really immersed myself in the culture was in the milongas in Buenos Aires. When I went to those, the tango clubs at 11:30 at night, which is actually going early, and somebody got me out on the floor and was kind to me because you could get hurt if you don't know what you're doing. But in the process of doing that, I learned so much about the neighborhoods, about the culture, and about the history, which is really what your show is all about.
And about the people, right, Peter? I mean, the person that you were dancing with, they're really taking you in on their life, on who they are, on what this dance represents. And I think that's what sometimes we're missing when we travel. We feel like, how do I connect with locals? How do I connect not just with the culture and the beautiful scenery and the history, but the actual people? And for me, dance is an immediate way to do that because you're touching someone else very respectfully, obviously. And when you were talking about going to milongas, I started getting goosebumps because Argentina, Buenos Aires, is one of my favorite destinations. It's one of my favorite episodes that we've ever filmed. And it's true. You really feel the passion of the dance, the passion of the people, and you understand a lot of the culture based on the movements, on the music, and all of those things. So, it's an amazing way to really immerse yourself into a culture pretty immediately,
And think about this. Throw the language barriers out the window because dance is its own language, and it's almost an easier way to get into it.
It is, and that's how the idea of the show started. When I would travel for fun, I obviously don't speak hundreds and hundreds of languages that exist in the world, but I do speak the language of dance, and so immediately these friendships were built. I like to say I make new friends by dancing with strangers, and that's been the truth for all these years that I've been dancing. I'm able to go back to these destinations and feature a lot of people that I've met along the way in episodes of my show, and I think it's a true honor to say that these people have become my friends over the years. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
I mean, there are the traditional cultural dances of a country or a region. And then let's not forget, there's the club scene, too. I mean, talking about dancing with strangers, my goodness. In all of your travels, and look, I do not fancy myself as a great dancer. I do my best. But there are dances out there that scare me. There are dances out, I mean, in Ireland, I couldn't do what Michael Flatley does. You know, it's just, you sit there and you go, I would be in orthopedic surgery. So are there dances? I mean, are you saying to me that on every show that you do, you're doing every one of those dances?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And look, I'm a trained dancer. I grew up dancing. I love dancing. I'm not doing this to become a professional Irish step dancer like Michael Flatley, nor a professional tango dancer. But what I am doing is giving myself the grace to try. And I think that's what a lot of travelers need to give themselves, is the grace to mess up. right? It doesn't have to be perfect. And I'm the first to show on my series every time I mess up, because that's when it's the most fun, right? I'm laughing with someone else. It's very lighthearted, and people see that I don't care if I make a fool of myself. Granted, I'm able to pick it up fairly quickly because that's my job. This is what I do for a living. But at the same time, I really hope it inspires other people to step out of their comfort zone, whether they want to try a dance class or a music class or a painting course, or, you know, do something that gets them a little uncomfortable, but enough that they feel that they can connect with someone else and share that vulnerability in a very safe and positive way. So, yes, I try every single dance. Every place I go, I'm like, maybe this is the time that I don't get it. I mean, we were in Scotland celebrating Hogmanay for the new year, and I tried to play the bagpipes. I'm also a musician. It was a disaster. It felt like a dying animal was being squeezed between my arms. I mean, and you have to laugh about it, which shows, you know, the amount of skill and years of training to do all of these things. But it really dives into the humor of it a little bit, but also what the culture means, where the history of that instrument came from, what it represents for the people, the pride of the Scots, you know. So it's just stepping out of your comfort zone just a little bit, just a little bit.
You know, when I remember going to the Lau Archipelago in Fiji, very difficult islands to get to, it's all about the dance. And when they tell you the dance, they tell you the story of their ancestors. They tell you the story of how they came to the island, how they fought battles, how they won, how they lost, how they, you know, how they see their future. It's all part of that dance, isn't it?
It is. And we have an episode that we did in the Cook Islands, very similar. The Polynesian culture is all about storytelling, but all dance is really about storytelling. And I think a lot of people forget the music and the dance is interconnected in almost every single culture. If you look at the Caribbean, a lot of those dances and music come from West Africa, which is almost a miracle that any of those rhythms even exist today and have survived. So it's about preservation of culture, perseverance of the people, storytelling through movement, storytelling through singing, through song. And dance is that language. Dance is that language to connect people and to, as an identity of a culture, you know? So I think that's why there's so much pride behind dance.
There's also the concept of protecting that culture through dance and not letting it get corrupted. I remember... Yeah. On that same trip to Fiji, which goes back to like the late 70s, I was in the middle of an island that had no radio, no television, no communication except an emergency radio that they could use 1 hour a day if they needed to. So their connection with the outside world was very limited. And yet at night one night, one of the kids was doing the moonwalk for me. And where did they get it, right? Somebody actually showed up about, you know, a week earlier with some sort of a film. It was a film with a small camera, and they saw Michael Jackson. And next thing you know, that became the dance of that island. So in a way, I was sort of upset by it, only because I didn't want them to lose what they had already.
Well, you have to think over the years, thousands and thousands of years of evolution, is that dance evolves just like human language evolves, people immigrate. So there are dances that didn't exist 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, and have evolved and merged with other dances. You know, I think that protection, there's a double-edged sword, right? I went to the islands of Guadeloupe, in the French Caribbean. They have a protected dance called Guoca. It's an intangible heritage recognized by UNESCO. But at the same time, there's this evolution of musicians and dancers that are taking their Guadeloupean heritage, the Guoca roots, and creating more modern music, contemporary music, along with giving sort of a nod to their Guoca heritage, and then bringing a whole new audience to this style of music that they may never heard of. So, yes, there is a beautiful way to preserve the culture, but I think dance and music and humans have evolved forever. So we can't really freeze that, but at the same time honor it, and then continue to build on the evolution of, we want more and more people to see these beautiful, beautiful rhythms. There's a difference between cultural appreciation and cultural appropriation. And I think that's where it gets a little hairy sometimes. But for the people whose culture this is, and they are evolving it within their own community, it's a beautiful thing to keep that preserved, but also evolving for the future.
Okay, so I've got to ask this question. In all of your travels, what's the one dance that you were the proudest that you were able to master? And what's the one dance you had no chance?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's a few, and I'm thinking actually tango is a very difficult dance. Tango is a very, very difficult dance. And in our episode, I had just learned tango that week. We were filming for 5 days. I was in Buenos Aires. It was the second episode I've ever filmed. And all of a sudden, I knew I was going to be in a professional tango show called Tango Porteño. It's a very famous show right in Buenos Aires, in the heart of the city. And I thought I was going to be a background dancer. And I meet with the choreographer, and he says, you're going to be a featured dancer. I literally had just started learning tango 5 days before. So I was so incredibly nervous. But then as I was coming on stage, I produced my show just like you, Peter. You know, we're independent producers on public television. This was my dream. I dreamt to be a host and producer of this show where I travel and dance around the world. And I thought, you know, Michaela, there's no reason to be nervous. You're living your dream. And right before I went on stage, I had this huge smile on my face. It wasn't perfect, but we did it. And the crowd applauded. I literally was in tears. I was so nervous. So that's my proudest moment. And I've kept that within me, of reminding me every time I get a little bit nervous, which I don't really anymore, because I remind myself, you're living your dream, Michaela, of traveling the world, connecting with people through dance and music.
My thanks to Michaela, to Governor Polis, and my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, just rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, the answer's easy. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Eye on Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Eye on Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Eye on Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.